Cirrus tells employees what's ahead in 2009. Boeing reports sales and deliveries down sharply in 2008. And a Southwest pilot is on paid leave till the blood test comes back. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, January 9th, 2009. Cirrus Design's incoming CEO, Brent Wouters, briefed staff yesterday on the company's goals, status, and plans for 2009. The meeting comes as Cirrus begins recalling furloughed workers, but when everything settles, the company will be 290 employees smaller than it was a year ago, and production will have been adjusted downward to meet the challenges of the current economy. Wouters told workers Cirrus has reduced payroll by 23% and cut annual expenses significantly. He adds that a no-money-down sales program has also knocked 10% off the list price of the SR-20 and SR-22. Cirrus finished up 2008 with sales of 549 new and 114 used planes. That's down 23% from 2007. Coincidentally, the same percentage the company has cut payroll. For 2009, Cirrus will maintain production at 8 airplanes per week, offer some employees extended furloughs with extended benefits and other aids, and reorganize staffing to match the reduced production level. Wouter says the elimination of over 75 aircraft from inventory, a reduction of $20 million in debt load, a reduction in annual expenses of $36 million, and the reduction of the company's break-even point from 600 airplanes per year to 400 puts Cirrus in a good position to remain competitive and grow. Boeing has announced its 2008 year-end numbers. The company spent all year damping expectations, and sure enough, the numbers are way down from 2007. The company says it took net orders for 662 new planes for the year, bringing its backlog to more than 3,700 airplanes. That's less than half 2007's record 1,413 net orders, and it marks the first year in four that Boeing took orders for less than 1,000 airliners. It's also about 200 fewer sales than Airbus is expected to claim for the year when it releases 2008 totals later this month. Boeing Commercial Airplanes CEO Scott Carson remained upbeat, noting that the 2008 order total was still the eighth highest on record. Quote, "We're still leaders in commercial aviation, and with that comes the responsibility to deliver the best value to our customers, our shareholders, and our communities," unquote. The 737 narrowbody line remained the company's bestseller, and sales of the much-delayed 787 Dreamliner also remained fairly strong, with 93 new planes ordered, primarily by customers in the Middle East. Boeing's aircraft deliveries for 2008 took a big hit, as expected, from the machinist strike. The total was 375 airplanes delivered to customers. That's 66 fewer planes than in 2007, and 72 fewer than Airbus delivered in 2007. Airbus is expected to announce close to 500 deliveries for 2008. We told you yesterday about a lawsuit by seven airlines against the FAA's new crew rest requirements, seeking the agency to submit to a formal rulemaking process to get industry input. Here are a few details on those rules. Tulsa World reports the new regs require longer rest periods for pilots flying more than 16 consecutive hours, and follow negotiations with Delta 2 years ago related to a proposed route from New York JFK to Mumbai, India. The FAA tells the paper Delta proposed flying the route with four pilots, promising a 24-hour rest before the flight, a 48-hour rest after the flight, and rotating rest periods during the flight. But when the FAA created a new regulatory requirement for other airlines on long-haul routes based on that Delta plan, the other airlines complained it creates a financial burden, with no proof the extra rest actually improves safety. American Airlines, which has come under public criticism from its pilots' union over its participation in the lawsuit, is trying to hold its public relations ground by stressing that it's not against safety, only in favor of the correct procedure to allow the FAA to make an informed decision. One Southwest Airlines pilot will be getting lots of rest. The airline has put him on paid leave while the FAA investigates whether he showed up for work drunk. WBNS-TV in Columbus, Ohio, reports two passengers noticed the pilot appeared intoxicated as he went through a security checkpoint Tuesday afternoon. One of them, Andy Mazner, told the station, quote, "We told the TSA guy, hey, That pilot smells like he's reeking of alcohol. He ought to be checked out, unquote. The two men say they followed the pilot down the concourse and confronted him when he reached the gate. Mazner recalls, quote, the guy just took off running. He didn't say, I haven't been drinking. He just turned beet red and took off. Officials later found the man in a restroom stall. The pilot had removed his uniform jacket and hat and told police he had called in sick for his scheduled flight to Orlando. The pilot reportedly said he hadn't been drinking, but admitted he'd partied hard the night before. Southwest said blood test results were not yet available. Up next on ANN, Continental and Boeing take the next step in biofuel testing. The Yanks Air Museum and Pentagon settle their fight over two F-14s. And NATA teams with a software firm to save on fuel costs. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for January 9th, 2009. I'm Paul Plagg. On Wednesday, Continental Airlines demonstrated the use of sustainable biofuel to power a commercial aircraft for the first time ever in North America. The flight was conducted in partnership with Boeing, GE Aviation CFM International, and Honeywell's UOP. It also marked the first sustainable biofuel demonstration flight by a commercial carrier using a two-engine aircraft, in this case a Boeing 737. Previous biofuel tests have used jets with four engines, with the biofuel mix used in only one of the four. After the plane landed back at George Bush Intercontinental Houston Airport, airline spokesman David Messing told Bloomberg, quote, the initial observations are that there's no difference in terms of the performance of the airplane, unquote. The biofuel blend included components derived from algae and Jatropha plants. Continental says both are sustainable second-generation sources that do not impact food crops or water resources or contribute to deforestation. The flight operated with a 50-50 mix of biofuel and petroleum-based jet fuel in the number 2 engine. ANN has learned the Yanks Air Museum of Chino, California, and the United States government have resolved their squabble over two F-14 Tomcat fighter aircraft that Yanks had previously purchased. The feds seized those aircraft in 2007, contending that the planes were not properly sold to Yanks and otherwise raised national security concerns. The U.S. government has been embarrassed when parts from surplus Tomcats found their way to Iran, which is the last operator of F-14s, using planes received from the U.S. in the 1970s when the Shah was still in. The Jones Day law firm says the settlement will provide Yanks with additional opportunities to create new, as well as expand and complete existing, displays of historic naval aircraft through participation in the Navy's prestigious Museum Loan Program and other valuable consideration. In exchange, however, Yanks must waive any further claim to those two F-14s. Both sides say they're happy with the arrangement. NASA Wednesday moved the Space Shuttle Discovery from Orbiter Processing Facility 3 to its vehicle assembly building at the Kennedy Space Center, following delays caused by a troublesome tire and a midday rainstorm near Kennedy Space Center. Yesterday, the shuttle was joined with the solid rocket boosters and external fuel tank already inside the building's high bay. The payload for mission STS-119 consists of a truss segment and solar arrays for the International Space Station. Those will be brought into position on Sunday. Then, NASA's crawler transporter is scheduled to carry the shuttle to Launch Pad 39A starting at 4 a.m. on Wednesday. Commander Lee Archambault and his six crewmates are expected at Kennedy for a full-dress rehearsal called the Terminal Countdown Demonstration Test. That happens January 19th through the 21st. They'll check out the spacecraft and payload, try on their custom-made flight suits, and review safety procedures. Discovery is scheduled to lift off at 7:32 a.m. Eastern Time on February 12th. At next week's 20th annual NBAA Schedulers and Dispatchers Conference in Long Beach, California, attendees will get a chance to check out a new software product, which claims to be able to help cost-optimize trip planning. The National Air Transportation Association has teamed with Scheduling Sidecar Incorporated to provide users with fuel research and optimization that complements existing flight planning software. SSC automatically provides cost-saving fueling options at alternate airports near flight destinations, allowing trip schedulers to plan a trip efficiently. It also provides information regarding participating FBOs, including their pricing, amenities, and participation in programs such as NATA's Safety First training. SSC founder Andy Priester will be at the NATA booth at next week's show to demo his software. Still ahead, will hard times make travelers more polite? Here's why you don't yell bomb on a plane full of rappers. And the Lake Aircraft Company is for sale again. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, January 9th. I'm Paul Platt. Jetiquette Academy, as in jet etiquette, first came to ANN's attention last summer when the group implored passengers to consider the feelings of airline workers and offered a seminar for those workers to help them be both more understanding of customer issues and more resilient to the occasional bad egg. Now, Jetiquette founder Galen David, a 20-year purser with American Airlines, has used his Sky Steward blog to open a public discussion with passengers about good and bad travel etiquette. Quote, traveling with class is not simply putting down the Amex Platinum card and purchasing a seat in the first class section of a jumbo jet. In fact, whether you're traveling up front or in economy, your true level of class is actually reflected in your travel manners. The consensus so far has been that traveling would be infinitely less stressful if everyone displayed a little more consideration and courtesy toward others, unquote. Among the conclusions so far, David says do's include planning ahead so you don't hold up the security line, honoring other passengers' space when traveling in economy, going to the lavatory to blow your nose, and leaving that lavatory clean for the next person. Among the don'ts, and we wish it wasn't even necessary to point these out, don't get up and walk around barefoot. David calls it unsightly and unsanitary. Don't put garbage in seat pockets or throw it on the floor. Don't let your kids kick the back of the seat in front of them. And if it happens to you, you should not be shy about speaking to the parent. David adds, quote, hopefully, at a time when the simple things are again in vogue, the next year will be one of increased civility and courtesy in travel. Proper jetiquette starts one person at a time and travels with us around the world, unquote. You can debate the effectiveness of the Federal Air Marshal Service, but one thing was proven beyond a doubt on a Delta Airlines flight landing at LAX Monday morning. If someone threatens to blow up a plane full of rappers, action will be taken. CBS News reports a man who allegedly yelled, "I've got a bomb," on board Delta Flight 110 from Atlanta to LAX, was forcibly subdued by passengers who included members of the band for rap musician Asher Roth. Bass player and guitarist Chris Llewellyn told the Los Angeles Times, quote, "We were all sitting in our seats. My boys had their headphones on. I turned around and got up and ran to the back of the plane. The suspect was yelling, 'Don't come near me. I have a bomb. I have a bomb.' We all jumped him. He was struggling hardcore. I was holding down his arm. Somebody had a foot on his head. Everyone was holding down a different body part. He was going nuts. I was telling him to chill because he's not going anyplace," unquote. Eventually, a flight attendant located a restraining kit. The landing was otherwise uneventful. The assets of Lake Aircraft are on the auction block again. Revo Incorporated, the current owner, brags that Lake was, quote, the only FAA-certified single-engine amphibious airplane produced in the world, unquote. The company says the sale, quote, includes all of the intellectual property and equipment needed to manufacture the Lake Renegade, Sea Fury, and Sea Wolf airplanes, unquote. Revo purchased the rights to the Lake Aircraft Company in the early 1970s and has sporadically produced planes in the years since. Revo has tried to sell Lake before, notably at AirVenture 2005, where the sale failed to attract a single bidder even after the initial price was dropped from $20 million to $3 million. If you think you might be interested, the assets include the Lake FAA type certificate, global manufacturing and marketing rights, component and assembly tooling, dies, jigs, and engineering drawings. A team of Lake experts will also be available to assist in the transition and continued production. Revo President Armand Rivard observes you'd have the field to yourself. Quote, in the worldwide general aviation market, the Lake Amphibian has no FAA-certified competition in production today. Unquote. Now, depending on whether you're a glass-half-full or glass-half-empty type, that could be seen as either an unprecedented opportunity or a sign of a lifeless market segment. And finally, the inauguration of Barack Obama as President of the United States will be a historic event. Air Force Colonel Dennis Leyendecker, commander, music director, and conductor for the U.S. Air Force Band, is making sure his airmen see playing for the inauguration as one of the greatest moments of their careers. Quote, this is a historic moment for our country. It's a great example to the world of what it means to have a peaceful transition of power. Unquote. Leyendecker gave his pep talk to musicians assembled 9 across and 11 deep in the 459th Air Refueling Wing's Hangar 11 at Andrews Air Force Base at one of this week's 6 a.m. rehearsals. The Air Force Band will join the other military service bands in marching from the U.S. Capitol to the White House during the inaugural parade on January 20th. The U.S. Army Band, known as Pershing's Own, will go first. The President's Own U.S. Marine Corps Band will be on stage at the Capitol for the swearing-in ceremony, then march down Pennsylvania Avenue as part of the 2nd Parade Division. The U.S. Navy Band will follow in the 3rd Division. As the youngest of the premier military bands, with a heritage dating to 1941, the U.S. Air Force Band will march in the 4th Division. Each band will feature 99 musicians, a number reserved only for inaugural parades and state funeral processions. Leyendecker says that's a big band. Quote, directing it is kind of like steering an aircraft carrier. Unquote. And don't worry about the Air Force Band feeling dissed by bringing up the rear. Air Force Chief Master Sergeant Elizabeth Shouten, the band's superintendent, says with a smile, quote, the way we see it, they're saving the best for last. Unquote. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, hear how veteran air show performer and movie stunt pilot Porky Fornoff came to work in film, and how he became the demo pilot for the Lopresti Fury. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend, and have a clear and unlimited day.